Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Flushing is Burning. As always, I'm Grace. I'm recording this Thursday night. I'm hoping that this will be out by Saturday or Sunday before the Oscars. And this is obviously Oscar week. This is the big episode of sorts for us. Well, may say us, like there's more than one of me sitting in my room recording everything. But this is a big episode this week where I get to talk about everything with the show, and so I still want to do some baseball stuff. We'll do that first, and then we'll get into the Oscars of it all. We're in like the second or third week of baseball games in spring training, where the Mets have now won 6 spring training games. As of tonight, they just won their game before. You know, you've got McNeil had a little bit of an injury thing, but he's hoping to be back by this weekend. Francisco Alvarez looked great. I mean, he looks great just generally, both offensively. He's hit multiple home runs, I think 2 or 3. And defensively, he looks to have gotten even better. I think last year, one of the few things that was sort of raised as a concern for his on the defensive end was his inability to catch, to throw guys out. And he had 3 caught stealings today. Like, he threw 3 guys out, 2 in one inning, which is incredible. So that's very exciting. It's nice to have baseball back, and I'm also a soccer fan, and Gotham's back next week, next Friday. It's just nice. Like, I'm not the world's biggest men's basketball fan. Like, I'm a Bulls fan, but I'm not like a, you know, watch every single game of the Bulls fan, especially right now. So it's nice to, like, have, like, the winter months be my movie time, be my Oscar time. And now, just as the Oscars are ending, we're finally fully pressing into sports. Now, just generally throughout the league, there's been a little bit of news. One of the big ones is Lucas Giolito, who signed a 2-year deal with the Red Sox this offseason. Has some sort of UCL flexor injury. It's a strain, which is a tear, but just they don't know the severity of that tear, right? Like, that's what a strain is. It's a tear, but it's just not as severe as, like, a fully torn thing. I'm explaining injuries and science and medicine to you. I went to school for film, so I could be entirely wrong, but that's what I understand it to be. I took one medical anthropology course, so I think I'm an expert. He's going for a second opinion, but if he needs Tommy John surgery, this would be his second, which is, like, you know, not the best. I know that for a fact. He'd, like, two Tommy Johns, especially, he's not super old, and I don't think it's been, like, a ton of, because Tommy Johns usually last about 10 years. And let me just look up when was Lucas Giolito's first Tommy John? Lucas Giolito. But yeah, you know, you can, as we all knew, Jacob deGrom's arm fell apart, but he also had had his Tommy John like 13 years beforehand, so that tracked. He had Tommy John in 2012, which actually, that matches up pretty well. 12 years, might need a Tommy John again, but the, you know, he's 29, probably going to lose this entire season, so he'll be 30 by the time he gets back. And, you know, he's young enough that I see it being easier for him to come back than, like, a Jacob deGrom or whatever. But also, he hasn't been very good recently, so hopefully that doesn't mean the end of his career because he just gets worse. But he would miss this year if he needs the surgery, and the Red Sox would need another starter, and the consistent word for the last few weeks has been that the only team that keeps getting connected in any sort of really major and continuous way with Jordan Montgomery is the Red Sox. And this could be the thing that kicks his season into gear, especially since he does not a qualifying offer thing, so they wouldn't lose a pick. So I could see that very easily happening, which would be nice, and then that would bring us down to just Blake Snell, who we still have no idea where he's going to go, and he always needs longer to get ready. So I am guessing we're not seeing this past year's Cy Young winner until May, because he always takes super long, which, like, that sucks. It sucks for the sport that's happening, especially since there's plenty of teams that need another starter. I think he probably just signs, like, a 1 or 2 year, maybe a 3 year deal with opt-outs like Matt Chapman and Bellinger did. But yeah, I see him signing soon. It's just like they waited too long. Just everyone waited too long. Boris, him, the teams, they all waited too long. Another one that sort of popped up today is that Gavin Lux's position in the Dodgers infield at shortstop seems to be in flux. Thought of that one when I typed up the outline. I'm very excited about it. They were adamant, even after, you know, especially after his injury last year, he's going to be the shortstop next year. He was supposed to be the shortstop starting last year. Shortstop next year. So they didn't re-sign Trey Turner, also because they were trying to get under the tax before they signed Otani. They didn't keep Turner. They traded for Miguel Rojas, who has, you know, he's still there, but, like, he's older, he's not as good anymore. And the issue now is that for all of that, he's our shortstop. He's been dog shit this spring at short. And I just want to bring up, I know he made multiple weird plays the other day. I don't know that they were full errors. During Yamamoto's first start, which led to him looking like dog shit. Let's see. I mean, he's hitting .348. Fielding. Errors. He's got two errors in spring so far. Not what you want. But what's really interesting about this is now the Dodgers are in a position where their lineup is great. You don't want to face them for your pitcher. But you hit anything to the left side of the infield and it's like the world's most holy Swiss cheese between Lux and Max Muncy. Like, good fucking luck. Like, you better hope no one hits anything to the to that side of the infield. It would be a disaster class. So that's going to be something interesting to monitor with the Dodgers, with all of the success that they're looking for, with Freddie Freeman that they have at first. And Mookie Betts is pretty good at second. Mookie Betts, pretty good at baseball. You heard it here first. And, like, not a bad outfield, but they just, like, kind of, you know, it's like that drawing of the horse where, like, it starts out really good, and then by the end it looks like a child drew it, and that child part is the Lux Muncy defense. Like, oh, we forgot something here. And finally, something that's been kicking up over the last couple of days to week is we're already starting to hear the stirrings of the Juan Soto Mets possibility. This is very interesting to me. It would be very fun. He has been open about liking to hit in Citi Field. I think there's always been mutual interest there, because why wouldn't there be on the Mets' behalf? Like, if you were to ask them, would you want Juan Soto on your baseball team? The answer that any sane person who hasn't been kicked in the head by a horse would say is yes, of course. It's also a lot of money for, I think this season was a lot of, like, we don't sign anyone, get under that tax, you know, not like, it's not like they're not going to go over the tax next year, but they don't want to go over the highest tax, right? Because look at how that worked out. But get under the tax. So that way next year, you know, you've got the Scherzer money coming off the books, the McCann money will be off the books. I think the Cano money is already off the books, but so much money will be off the books. I think right now they have $155 million devoted to the salary next year, which is, you know, Nimmo, Lindor, Senga, McNeil. I don't know if that includes, like, Minaya. Narvaez will be off the books by next year. They'll still have Marte. But I think next year's his last year. So, like, you know, you could pretend, if he shows anything left in the tank, you could trade him somewhere this year or anything like that. But they're going to have a lot of space. So it's a lot of money for DH, but he would be such a good young DH, like, directly smack dab in the middle of his prime. Like, I think he's going to be 26 when he's a free agent, or his first year after being a free agent. So you're getting prime Juan Soto, and you also, like, my guess is he's going to want $500 million, but you're probably going to be able to spread that over, like, 13 to 15 years. And then you've got, you know, Juan Soto's prime, and, like, if he continues down the path that everyone sees that he's on, again, it's another, you know, and you want to win a World Series, and he would get you closer to that as well, obviously, being the hitter that he is, you want a player like that on your team. But I think also for a team like the Mets, where they don't have that great of a team history, there's two players in the Hall of Fame with the Mets logo on their cap. When Beltran gets in, he will hopefully be the third, because it's either going to be that or a blank cap. So I assume he goes on as a Met. But, like, other than that, like, if DeGrom makes it, he would have a Met thing on his cap. If the Earth spins the opposite direction on its axis, and all of a sudden we elect David Wright soon, that's one. But, like, Lindor, part of the appeal of getting Lindor is you're going to have him for the rest of his career, and he's going to go into the hole with the Mets logo on his cap. And it's the same thing. You sign Juan Soto, you get him for 13 to 15 years, he goes into the Hall of Fame with the Mets logo on his cap. And that, because when you think about it, it's the Ted Williams. You see him in the Hall of Fame, it's the Red Sox on his cap, right? And that's more than just, oh, he played for the Red Sox. It's, wow, Red Sox had a player that was that good that they got him here. Or, you know, Babe Ruth, Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera. What? The Yankees had players that good that they all got in here. And for the Mets, it's like there's two people that were that good that they got in there, that were that good with the Mets, right? Because the Mets have a long storied history of getting Hall of Famers in for, like, the last 2 or 3 years of their career. And then they look like dog shit. But the other thing is that Soto is going to happen almost certainly, because they share Boris. Both Boris clients. Soto's going to have to happen before Alonso happens, right? Because the whole thought process of that is going to be, well, if Soto signs, then that domino falls, and the teams that weren't in on Soto and lost can now be in on Alonso if they want, and they get someone that they could put at the DH spot, essentially. He's going to give you, I don't even say less defensive flexibility, just different defensive flexibility, because I think Alonso is a slightly better defender than Juan Soto. Juan Soto is terrible. But Juan Soto, you can plug in an outfield spot, and Pete, you can only play at first base. So it's, like, weird where, like, Pete's better defensively, but it's not as flexible, whereas, like, Juan Soto, you stick him in left field. You're going to have less left or right fielders as a team than you will first baseman, just because that's where they tend to stick the terrible players in the field who can hit. But yeah, that's the update of spring training, the news on the block. This is going to be a slightly shorter first segment, as I'm sure you're seeing, but I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back. We are going to dive headfirst into this year's Oscars.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay. And we're back. So this year's Oscars, they're this Sunday. So this is the 7th. They're on the 10th, Sunday, March 10th at 7 p.m. And I want to say this before I dive into the predictions aspect of it. Janet Yang, who is the current president of the Academy, has made several decisions, and it's also the producers who are doing this too, but Janet Yang, between this, the moving up of the start time by an hour, because the number one complaint with the Oscars was they went too late. They went to midnight plus sometimes on the East Coast. You start at 7. It's only an hour earlier. And on the West Coast now, basically you're changing it from going from 5 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Not that big of a deal anyway. I don't know. I don't live on the West Coast. But if I was doing something and it started at 5 and instead of start at 4, I actually would think that would be more convenient. Because the odds that it's over in time for me to still have something I can do in like a significant way after that. Like, I would rather watch a baseball game that starts at 4 o'clock than 5 o'clock. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just more time afterwards. I can have still another activity after that or a cool down period. But doing that, adding the casting category that's supposed to come, I believe, for the films of 2025. So not next year, but the year after. These decisions are so great, and they are exactly what... I'm a big Oscar fan, big Oscar junkie, and I am in, like, a very interesting subsect of film Twitter that is Oscar-based. Like, that's where I find myself gravitating toward. Because... so many people in that area who are your core fans want these things really bad. We want to stay the same length so we can present all the awards. Just start it earlier. And then it'll still end at like 11:15 or whatever. Oh, not even, because usually the Oscars go like 3:30. It's usually right, like three and a half hours. So it'll end at 10:30. That's great. Because the issue with the Oscars before was, like, it would cut into all of the evening news, and they usually show a show after it. This year, it's going to be Abbott Elementary. It ends, even if it doesn't end at 10, it ends at 10:30, which I think might actually be the time slot. They might have made it a 3.5-hour time slot, which would also be genius. You still have time for Abbott Elementary and then the news. It's perfect. And so it's stuff like this that is what the fans want, rather than a popular film award that we saw a few years ago when they did the fan favorite movie moment. The fan favorite movie. Those sucked because they were very clearly pandering, right? Like, they were like, we're attempting to draw in the people who want to see Spider-Man get an Oscar. That's what the money is for. It's not for the Oscar. They're not making Spider-Man to be an Academy Award-winning film. That just happened with Black Panther because they got someone who made a really good movie. Spider-Man, the reward is that it made $1.5 billion. Like, you know, we don't need to then also give it this fake Oscar that it didn't even win. Because the Zack Snyder fans are crazy in the head. So it's stuff like this. And then also, we're doing, I'm part of the Academy. They're doing a whole thing this year where it's been 15 years since they did this. And I loved when they did this. Instead of having, and I love the tradition of this, but I also love that, like, I think we should find a way to do both where, like, every couple of years we do this. I don't think you can do it every year just because the amount of people you need to do it, you would just sort of end up churning through the same people. But, like, if you do this once every 10 years, I think it would be really fun. And they're doing it this year. Instead of having last year's supporting actor present to best supporting actress for this year, last year's best actress present to best actor this year, they're getting a group of 5 winners for each category to present it, and each one will sort of announce one of the nominees, go through it that way, and then hand out the award. And that's really fun, because what it does is that's the way you celebrate film history without taking up too much time on something dumb or something that, again, the Oscars for the films of 2021 is one of the worst shows I've ever seen in my life. One of the worst Oscars I've ever watched. The vibe in the room, vile. You could feel it, like, it just felt gross in there. And it was a lot of, like, we hate the movies, but we're going to pretend we're celebrating the movies, but it would just be, like, glorified, like, don't you love Disney? It was the weirdest thing I ever watched. But this is the stuff that is how you celebrate film history, that you turn around. And the presenters this year, and I want to pull it up so that way when I read through each category for the acting stuff, at least I can say who's expected to present. But they're not just saying, oh, well, let's get the last 5 people. They're making decisions based on who's nominated and saying, okay, it would be really interesting to see Jessica Lange hand to this person or Sally Field, you know. So let me just pull this up. Sorry, I have, like, my allergies are kind of kicking up. So if you hear me sort of huffing and puffing, it's just like I can't get a lot of air in because if I took a Claritin and now my everything is still, like, kind of fudgy. So here are the predictions. Adapted screenplay. We'll start. We'll go from the above the line categories, which, if you're that is a term used in the industry. If you're not aware, I don't want to talk down to anyone here, but in case there's anyone listening who does not know what this means, above the line is the people that get credited above the line. It sounds like such a stupid, but, like, if you're watching the credits, it's the stuff that gets it's the people who can negotiate, like, based on their name, not based on, oh, we're in a union and this is what we get paid, but, like, actors, directors, writers, above the line stuff, and picture, obviously. So for best adapted screenplay, I have this going to American Fiction. After everything that happened, I know that it might be a popular choice to say, well, maybe Barbie takes it, American Fiction and Barbie have never faced off, but American Fiction has won literally every precursor there is for this category. And I think it's just going to come down to category confusion. I genuinely think it's actually going to be, like, a relatively low total for a winner, just because I think all of the nominees here are going to have their admirers. I personally would vote for Oppenheimer. I'm currently reading about halfway through the adapted screenplay of Oppenheimer. I got it for Christmas. This is one of the most incredible screenplays I've ever read in my life. You know, like, it just plays with the form. It's written in first person. Half of it is the fusion part, the part that's in color, is written in first person. Screenplays don't do that. And it reads so well. And it's a marvel. So if I had a ballot, I would vote for Oppenheimer. But I think it goes to American Fiction because it's a movie about writing. And it's funny. And they do comedies do well in this category because it is like a writery thing that it's like, oh, a comedy, you know, was written well. I do want to say, though, also justice for Killers of the Flower Moon not even getting nominated in this category. That is also, I just went and saw it again today. It was my favorite movie of the year. I think it is the best movie of the year by far. And that's not a diss to anyone else. It's not a diss to Nolan and Oppenheimer. I think Oppenheimer is going to be one of the best winners of Best Picture ever. And we'll get to that later. But obviously, I'm predicting that to win Best Picture. But I think Killers of the Flower Moon in about, I think there's already people doing that, but in like 5 to 10 years, people are going to look and say, wow, any other year and that movie sweeps. You know, it is just so, and especially knowing, I've read the book, and I really recommend you read the book. David Grand's book is great, but it reads as a whodunit. You're reading it more from the perspective of the FBI. And the genius of basically saying, we will tell you up front who this is, because the actual story for you to know, you can Google and see who did this. Like, you can just figure that out. But to get into 3.5 hours of some of the greatest, it is a movie, I'm genuinely thinking about it, and I'm getting emotional. It is a movie that is about an attempt to genocide people for their land and for what that land represents for them, the oil and the money. And it is only gotten more pressing and more pressing and more present in the months since its first initial release at Cannes and then its actual stateside release in October. It is so current, and it is about an event 100 years ago. And the book is the book to movie adaptation is so great. And I want to see if I can buy it, because I would the screenplay, because I'd love to read it. I think it's just, it works so well. So it's just, it's disappointing to see that not get here. I also, and we'll get into this a little bit later, there's a movie in this category that I would take out. And it is not the one that I think a lot of people would say, well, I think that's the weakest one. I rewatched one of these movies recently, and I did not like it nearly as much as I did the first time, to the point that it went from being, like, my number 4 in Best Picture to my, like, number 9. You know, and my number 10 is a movie I just actively think should not be in there. So we'll get into that later, but I think there is a space for Killers, and the fact that it didn't make it in is upsetting. Anyway, I gotta speed through these. This is the three of the 4 acting categories. I think I'll actually fly through a little bit more, so it's okay that I'm riffing on adapted screenplay. Original screenplay. This goes to Anatomy of a Fall. I think for a while people were saying, well, it'll be the holdovers, and Anatomy of a Fall won everything, and I think what helps is it is such a great movie. I saw it in the theater the other day with my dad, and it shot up to my number 2 of the year. Like, it is just below Killers of the Flower Moon. It is, again, it is so much more than what you think it is. It's more than a courtroom movie. It's an anatomy of a fall, but it's an anatomy of a relationship. And it's basically, if this were to happen to so many people, if this were to happen to them, they would go through, not the same exact thing, depending on what country they're in, because the French legal system is crazy, but they would go through the same thing, where they would be, if there was a recording of a fight between people, it would be dissected like this, and it could just be a fight, and it's so brilliantly written, I can't get over how true it is. It reminded me a lot on the second viewing of a movie I loved from 2019, Marriage Story, which only won for Laura Dern. But it captured the way that people speak to each other when angry and when feeling those sort of really intense emotions, and how the things that come flying out aren't true or are a grain of truth surrounded by a ball of exaggeration. And it's just heat of the moment stuff. But then when you watch it, and I thought that the outcry against the Marriage Story fight scene was so ridiculous, because it's like, you've never witnessed two people fighting like that. I have. like, people say the worst stuff to each other when they're fighting that they don't actually mean, just because they are trying to A, win, and B, release. It's like an Instant Pot, and it's been on ceiling the whole time, and then you flip it to venting, and I burned the shit out of my hand doing that the other night. Yeah, it's just, I think it's great. And I think what also helps here is that Justine Triet isn't going to win director, isn't going to win picture. Sandra Hüller almost certainly isn't going to win actress. It's not going to win editing. This is the only place for it to win. It probably would have been able to win international. It would have been going up against Zone of Interest, so it would have been a fight. But it's won every international prize, essentially, other than the BAFTA. But the French government didn't even submit it as their film. Each governmental body of a country has the ability to, other than the American government, to submit a nominee to get selected. And France didn't submit it because Justine Triet has been publicly critical of the French government in a good way. Like in the, like, right way. Like, she's more left than they are. She's not, like, one of these crazy far-right French people that we see. So they didn't submit it. And they cost themselves a win, I think. I think they would have won. They'd Messi the dog run around. Also, the best dog performance I've ever seen. We'll get into one of the other performances, or two of the other performances before, later. But the dog is brilliant in it. They should do a special Oscar. Back in, like, the 30s, they would do, like, special Oscars for kids, and they'd be like, here's your juvenile Oscar. And it would be, like, a smaller version of the Oscar statue. You know, like, Judy Garland got one. Shirley Temple got one. They should do that. They should make a dog Oscar. Like, do that for Messi. Because I'm literally never seen a dog be that good in a movie. That dog deserves some dog-gam recognition. Other than the Palm Dog, which is great, too. Anyway. This is easier. Supporting actor, Robert Downey Jr. I don't think anyone's got a doubt about this. It's going to be great to watch him win with his whole career. He's going to give a great speech. I just want to say justice for Charles Melton and Milo Machado Grainer in Anatomy of a Fall should be here too. There are two nominees I'd kick out. One of them is Sterling K. Brown, who is fine in American Fiction. I think his performance is very nice, very funny, light. And Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. I, on a rewatch, hated that performance. I thought he was so over the top, it was stilted. It just bugged the shit out of me. So, yeah, I would get those two guys in there. Charles Melton not being here is a crime. Moving on. Supporting actress, Davine Dre Randolph. This is, if you are a fan of the Mets, you may have heard of Ben Zosmer. He's one of their assistant GMs. He does Oscar metrics, where he does mathematical predictions based on precursors and stuff like that. And he has Davine Dre Randolph as the most likely winner of the night. More likely than picture for Oppenheimer, more likely than supporting actor for Robert Downey Jr. Because she has won literally everything. Like, I think she is like Chloe Zhaoing her way through supporting actress prizes. And what I love about this year, and we'll get more into this with the other actors too, because I love every performance that is going to, well, of the four acting categories, three of them are pretty much locked up, and those three, I love every single one of them. And one of the two choices for actress is my favorite performance of the year. This could be one of the most interesting and exciting and best acting winning groups I've ever seen. And Randolph is such a big part of that. I just rewatched The Holdovers. I've been going through all these movies at the Regal Best Picture Film Festival. I just rewatched The Holdovers, and it is such quiet. This year is such a, like, Robert Downey Jr. is the loudest of these locked up performance winners. And, like, unless Emma Stone wins, if Emma Stone wins actress, then this won't be the case. But he is of the three locked up acting winning races, the most, like, big. And his performance isn't even that big. It's not that big all the time. There's big moments. But he's also playing, well, for an Academy that has, for many, many years, tended to go, what is the biggest performance? as opposed to what is the best performance. What performance has the most makeup? What performance has the most yelling and screaming and crying and I'm covered in dirt? You know, best actress winners. They gotta cry. Which actually favors the other person this year, but this is such like a low-key, like, I love Randolph's performance because it is so low-key. The things that she does with her eyes, with her body, with her voice, but not in like a yelling way, just in a tone. She finds the comedic parts and the dramatic parts, and she mixes them and melds them and intertwines them in a way that Mary Lamb feels so real. And it's such a beautiful performance, and I'm so thrilled for her to get this Oscar. Like, I cannot wait. The way they do it tends to fluctuate whether supporting actor is the first winner of the night or supporting actress. If it's like a more often than not, it's supporting actress. So if this is the first win of the night, I mean, either of them will be a great like entrance point. But I think if this is the first win of the night, it will be such a lovely way to start the Oscars. Like, it'll just, it's going to be so nice. This year's Oscars are going to be so nice. And I love that. Actor. Up until he won the SAG, I thought it was going to be Paul Giamatti because I thought Paul Giamatti was going to win the SAG. And I was going to spring off that because, as we saw last year, the SAG now, because it is now the last award show and it happens usually right in the middle of voting, tends to be a better predictor. I am now fully on the Cillian Murphy train. Paul's going to win it one day. Paul Giamatti will win it one day, and it will send me into a catatonic state. But I think if the person who wins actress, I will be so emotionally drained from that that it's probably a good thing I don't also sob over my grandfather during the same night. But Cillian Murphy's such a great win. Again, such an understated performance. And it for best actor, I want you to go back and just look for the like last decade, 15 years, 20 years even. But especially the 2010s were rough for best actor. Like, I think there's like two, maybe three good wins in there. It's a lot of bad stuff. And like even the last couple years, like, I'm glad. I like that Brendan Fraser has an Oscar. I don't think he should have won it. I think it should have been Paul Mescal, but that's a different story for a different day. Will Smith is fine in King Richard. Again, I think that should have been Andrew Garfield. I also am not a part of the majority that loves Anthony Hopkins in The Father. I think he is good in it, but I think Riz Ahmed gave the best performance that year. And not to relitigate every Oscars, but like, do you see what I'm saying? If you were to sit me down and be like, Cillian Murphy won, I'd be like, yeah, that's a good winner. You sit me down and you go, Rami Malek won, and I want to tear my hair out. That was a bad year, too. That was such a bad, bad year. This is not tracking to be a 2018 year. So even if the person who wins actress isn't the one I'm rooting for, every other one is going to be so good, pretty much, that, like, how can I complain? I think it'll age poorly, but anyway, enough teasing of it. I think the SAG did it, and I think the reception in the room was what really sealed the deal for me. I think Lily Gladstone wins the Oscar, and I have been holding on by my fingernails to that. It is so quiet, so restrained, but again, I just saw it today. You watch her eyes. You watch her body. You see the way her mouth moves millimeter. It is like, it is genuinely one of the greatest performances I have seen in a very long time. And I think with the Oscar, the Academy makeup the way it is now, I think that they like to have the moment, and of all the wins that, like, Robert Downey Jr. will be a moment in of itself, but this will be the Michelle Yeoh, Kaylee Kwan, trying to think of like a similar thing here. The Troy Kotsur moment. Lily Gladstone gets up there, is the first Native actor to win. She, when you hear, go back and watch her win the SAG Award, the room roars. And I think that the losing the BAFTA thing, I actually don't think is as big of a deal as people want to make it out to be, because of the way that they do their nominations. Because she didn't get nominated at the BAFTAs. But she, I'm just checking the time here. Ooh, I'm really kicking through here. The last two are easy, so this is fine. The BAFTAs not being nominated isn't that, like, if she had been nominated there and lost to Emma Stone, I think it would be a bigger deal than her not being nominated at all, because they do a jury system, so only the top two nominees get through, and then the rest is through a jury. And we've no idea who, like, how the jury is going to go for anything. And it's very possible that, like, the top two were, and Emma Stone won that award, but it's very possible that the top two were, like, Emma Stone and, like, I'm trying to think who else was nominated for that award. Like, Mia McKenna-Bruce or someone who was in, like, a very British film that they would vote for. And that the jury was like, well, we should spread the love here, right? Because I think, I'm trying to remember, I don't know that Michelle Yeoh was nominated last year for the BAFTA. If she was, she lost the BAFTA to Cate Blanchett and then still won the Oscar. This is very much following the Michelle Yeoh path, with the only difference being that, like, Michelle Yeoh has, you know, 60 plus years, but I think also the story of, she was nominated for the BAFTA and still lost it to Cate Blanchett and then still won the Oscar. And I think you see Emma Stone react during the SAG one. She's practically leaping out of her chair when the name gets announced. Like, she stands up at a certain point, but, like, the name Lily gets said, and you see her kind of, like, jump in her chair and start to applaud. And I think that that is the feeling of the general American, especially, population, and the Academy has gotten more international. But I also find it hard to believe that the entire international body is solely going to go to Emma Stone, and they're going to be pretty split between Emma, Sandra Hüller, and Lily Gladstone, which, I want to be clear here, hot take, Emma Stone is my number three in this category. I think Sandra Hüller is head and shoulders above her as well. I think Emma Stone gives a very fun performance. I do not like Poor Things all that much, especially in a rewatch, and I just felt like so much of her performance was so big that it got stilted at certain points, and that it sort of stunted at certain moments. Like, the progression just stopped for, you know, half an hour or whatever, randomly. Or it would regress for a minute. It was very, very odd. The writing, I think, actually, that movie let her down more than anything. But she is good in it. But I think that Lily Gladstone just, A, represents so much. And I think also, it would be different if Emma Stone didn't have an Oscar. Emma Stone has an Oscar. And they like to award people very close together a lot of the times. I mean, look at Mahershala Ali, won two Oscars within, you know, 5 years. Or Daniel Day-Lewis won two Oscars within 5 years. Those were second and third Oscars, obviously. I think if she hadn't won before, it would be different. But she's won. Lily hasn't. And Emma almost certainly is going to be. She has another movie with Yorgos literally coming out this year. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I'm predicting Lily Gladstone. If Emma Stone wins, I won't be too disappointed. I love Emma Stone as an actress. If Sandra Hüller won, interesting thought experiment, I think I would be so shocked that I would have no emotion. And after the fact, I would think I personally would prefer Lily Gladstone, but the pick would be so wild. Because I think that's the three. I don't think Annette Bening or Carey Mulligan are anywhere close to this win. I think Sandra Hüller is in the mix there because her movie got 5 nominations. It's going to win one for, like, a big nomination. So I think she's actually kind of in the mix there, especially with the international part of the body. I felt it from the moment I saw the movie. I felt it was Lily Gladstone, and I would like to just take this moment to say, please go watch Certain Women. That was the first thing I saw her in. That's the first thing a lot of people saw her in. That was the first thing that Martin Scorsese saw her in. And he had her audition. She was about to, like, sort of start to drift away from acting. and he had her audition. He'd seen her in Certain Women. She is so great in that movie. Kelly Reichardt. One of our best and brightest. Anyway, quickly, director, Christopher Nolan. Finally. It's weird that Christopher Nolan doesn't have an Oscar. It's weird that Paul Thomas Anderson doesn't have an Oscar. It's weird that Martin Scorsese only has one Oscar. And yet, Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu has two. If not more, because I'm not certain if he was a producer on Birdman. Very odd set of circumstances we've found ourselves in. I'm an Iñárritu hater, right? I did not enjoy The Revenant. I am the low man on Birdman. Should have went to Boyhood. Linklater doesn't have an Oscar. What are we doing here? Anyway, picture, clearly, it's going to be Oppenheimer. This is so deserved. I mourn The Killers of the Flower Moon near shutout should Lily Gladstone win. Again, like I said before, I think it's the best movie by a mile. And I'm going to give you my ranking of the Best Picture nominees from best to worst. Personal. This isn't obviously fact. It's just personal feeling. Killers of the Flower Moon, 1 with a bullet. 2, Anatomy of a Fall. 3, Oppenheimer. Now, I'm recording this Thursday, and I'm seeing Oppenheimer again on Sunday. It is not inconceivable that Oppenheimer retakes second place, but as of this recording, and I've seen Oppenheimer 3 times, that was only my second time seeing Anatomy of a Fall. I have a really good grasp on it. I'm reading Oppenheimer right now. Like, I think Oppenheimer's my number 3. But again, great. I think Everything Everywhere was my number 3 last year. So, totally cool. If you're my top 3 and you win Best Picture, like, if you're my top 3 of Best Picture nominees and you win, I can't really complain. Number 4 is Zone of Interest. I think that's a brilliant movie. I think most of these movies are going to go on to be future classics. With the exception of, like, 1 or 2, I think most of these movies are going to live on for many, many years. And I think that is the best thing you can say. And the best thing you can say for a 10-movie Best Picture category is that 80% of the nominees in a year go on to be future classics. I don't think that's true of, like, 2 years ago. I'd have to go back. I can't even remember. Last year, you probably have actually a decent shot of it, thinking about, like, Top Gun and Everything Everywhere and stuff. Like, that group might actually live on beyond its years. But this is a great group. Zone of Interest, I think people say that's going to be used in, like, I've seen a few people say it's going to get used in, like, a high school classroom. I don't think so. I think that shit is really weird in terms of, like, the form for high school. They're just going to keep showing Schindler's List. Like, I watched Schindler's List in high school. They're just going to keep using Schindler's List. Or they're going to use, like, one of the other million World War II movies we get constantly. It's going to be Schindler's List. We need a Holocaust movie. Like, I hate to say it. It's going to be Schindler's List. You know where they'll show this one? College. College will get Zone of Interest. College, I watched Night and Fog. That's when you're going to get to watch Zone of Interest. Past Lives at the number 5 slot. What a gorgeous romance. I'm still mad that Greta Lee didn't get in for actress. The Women Talking of this year without the win. But Celine Song has a nice full career coming up for herself. Also, I always think it's so funny to remember that she wrote this movie about a love triangle where the woman is just torn apart emotionally, and it's very weird for everyone. And her husband in real life, Justin Kurtzky's, wrote the upcoming film Challengers. That's basically, like, it kind of feels like he wrote it. And he was like, man, so fucking hot for, like, a woman to be, like, kind of a bitch and in love with two guys, and then just emotionally destroy both of them. It's such a weird combo to me, but I love it. Holdovers, which shot up to a 5 out of 5 for me on my second viewing, comes in at number 6. I think that'll tell you how strong of a group this is. That The Holdovers, a movie that I genuinely adore, is my number 6. It's great. It's fun. Dominic Sessa should also have been closer to Best Supporting Actor than fucking Mark Ruffalo. Number 7, Barbie. No dig at Barbie. I think it's very fun, and I love that it got in here. Who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk back in July that Barbie would be in here and that Oppenheimer would be the Best Picture winner? I mean, at the time, people were like, Maestro's winning a ton of stuff, which is very funny to me. American Fiction, number 8 for me. Poor Things, number 9. Did not enjoy that on a rewatch. It's on Hulu now. You can go watch it for yourself. And Disney Plus, you can judge for yourself. I don't take my word for into it. I also don't like fantasy stuff and sci-fi stuff, and this movie kind of did a little too much of that for me. Like, I like monster movies, but this was, like, a little too much, like, the monster movie with, like, just hours and hours of sex. And I'm not one of those people that's like, there should be no sex in movies. I love sex in movies. I just, like, I don't want to see that much of Mark Ruffalo. You know what I'm, like, that, like, I, and, like, that much of Mark Ruffalo doing that whole thing. And then in final place, sputtering out of the gates, is Maestro. The only movie here that I clearly would take out. And I would probably replace it with, like, May, December. Like, listen, if it was me making this list, Bottoms would be in here, but, like, I understand the Academy wasn't going to do that. There's a better chance of the Academy doing May, December. But yeah, if you have an Oscar pool that you have to fill out before the awards start, I recommend you go to goldderby.com, go to the odds, in like the Oscar odds, and do combined. And that'll give you a pretty good idea of, like, what everyone's choosing. And that'll give you, like, the odds. The shorts, good luck. But other than that, it should be pretty good just to follow the ones on there. And obviously, if you've seen every movie in a category, you could probably guess, you know, say, okay, I think actually this one, you know, where you the Academy is a lot more like the normal person than you would think. A lot of steak eaters in the Academy. A lot of, like, the below-the-line people. Real normies. It's great. It's a good mix. But now that we've done that in 30 minutes, I apologize. But you knew that's what you were getting this week, so who am I to apologize? Stick around. We will be right back. I'm going to do a very abridged movie minute without a real actual movie.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. And we're back. So my movie minute this week is not a single film. It is that whenever you get this, I assume it'll probably come out Saturday, Sunday. And then you have, you know, whatever over the coming weeks. Not a lot of movies out. I haven't seen Dune Part 2 yet. Probably not going to get to see it for another couple weeks because I'm taking the week off for movie going, or not the week, it's a little too much for me. I'm taking a few days off for movie going, and then I'm doing, like, broadcast news. They're showing that at my local indie, and I gotta see Love Lies Bleeding on the first day it's out. But I'm taking, like, a little light break from movie going for a couple weeks, where I'm, like, only gonna really go if I have to. So my recommendation for you would be, whether it's before the Oscars or after, to watch these incredible films. This is truly one of the best years of the Oscars in recent memory. There's so many great films here, and I think that deserves celebration and recognition. And now that we have reached the end of the film year, in a way, even though 2023 ended on December 31st, the talking about the 2023 films doesn't end until March 10th. And this week in particular, I get so excited. I love the Oscars, but I also, this is my thing with anything. Christmas, summer, I get melancholy for the end, like 3 weeks before the end, right? I'm like, oh man, we have to say goodbye to this in a little bit. And I'm starting to feel real melancholy over the Oscars right now, and especially because this year was so good that, like, next week, this will be the past. Like, it's officially over. It is last year. And I'm so into stuff. I follow the film festivals, follow what shows I can. I follow the trailers and the casting and the release dates and the campaigning and everything like that. And all the shows and all the jockeying. And I listen to the podcasts and everything like that. And so, for the last however many months, I've gotten attached to these films. You know, in like a parasocial way. And I should really be admitting this, but like, in like a, these are the films. These are my films. These are the names I hear all the time. The actors, the movies, directors, the writers. I'm used to these names. I'm used to these faces. And after Sunday, they will be, they're not going to be gone, but like, they won't be talked about anymore, especially the movies. But like, these people are going to go hide away and make another movie, and it's going to take, you know, 12 to 16 months for us to hear anything about them. And it's just like, you know, a little sad. So my recommendation is, so many of these movies are available either streaming for free through platforms or to rent, or this is my favorite recommendation. A lot of these, a few of these movies have released on DVD, stuff like, I think Poor Things is out yet, but Oppenheimer, Barbie, Holdovers, Past Lives, I have all of those on my shelf. Some of, like, the lower level stuff, like, don't watch Gold. I watched Gold, it sucked ass, but, like, you know, lower level stuff. Guardians of the Galaxy got nominated. There's the international films. A lot of them are reaching theaters now. Elemental, Boy and the Heron, Spider-Verse. So many of these movies are available for you to watch. Netflix has Maestro if you want to do that. Sighty of the Snow I just watched. That was great. Give these movies a little bit of love. Let's keep them alive a little bit longer. And like, let's remember the year that was 2023. I still look back fondly on like 2016. I think about that. That was the year. The 2016 Oscars happened in early 2017. That was the first year of the Rio Best Picture Film Festival. I look back fondly on that. I look back fondly on the 2017 year, the 2019 year. So yeah, my recommendation, just let's celebrate these films for a little bit longer. Thank you for listening. You can find us on Twitter at FIBpod, on Instagram at FlushingIsBurningPod, and you can email us at FlushingIsBurning@gmail.com. If you like this show, you're probably listening to it on some sort of service that has the Home Run Applesauce Network, where you will find the other shows on this network, which I'm sure you will listen to, because if you listen to me, that's probably how you found me, was through those, or the Amazing Avenue website, which also had those. So From Complex to Queens, A Pod of Their Own, Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World Series, any of that stuff. Listen to that. And if you enjoy that, you go to homerunapplesauce.com. There's a little link, says Patreon. You click on it, it takes you to the Patreon page. I believe it's like $5 a month. You get exclusive episodes, monthly playlists, access to our Discord server, all sorts of good stuff. And yeah, it's I think worth it. So, and it, you, $5 a month, you're supporting us. I do see some of that. So if you enjoy the podcast, you have the $5 a month, I don't want to put you on to, or force you to do it, make you feel bad for doing it. But if you have the $5 a month, it's also our way. It means a lot, and you'll get a little something out of it too. So thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.